Hello, this is Level Up with Dani. I'm your host, Dani Stockham, and this is episode 13. I am starting today's show with a trigger warning. Today, I will be talking about suicide. I have an in-studio guest, Christine Lombardi, and this show will be a serious discussion about mental health, suicidal ideation, acts of suicide, and the heart-wrenching aftermath of death by suicide. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. Christine and I have known each other for about 7 years. She's a boy mom, and I'm a girl mom. My youngest and her eldest graduated high school together, and we have circled around each other through our children for years. My most important touchstone with Christine is through her work with Helsinki's Hope, which I will be giving her an opportunity to talk about today, and my respect for the kind of devoted mom I know her to be to her boys, because I'm also that mom. I have spoken about my personal wellness journey on this show a lot, and that includes mental wellness. The layers of mental health troubles include depression, anxiety, substance abuse, alcoholism, and all variety of self-harm, including disordered eating, cutting, attempts at suicide, and so many I have not named. There is an enormous chasm in where we can find care for those in need, and the truth is the necessary care is sourced mostly for wealthy families. Organizations like Helsinki's Hope, the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, and the Overwatch Collective work tirelessly to bridge this gap in access. Christine, please talk to us about Helsinki's Hope, how it came to be, and what your personal role is in this organization.
Well, first of all, thank you again for having me on the show. I'm really honored to be here, and I love talking about Helsinki's Hope every chance I get. So Helsinki's Hope was really born out of a tragedy. As you well know, the loss of my nephew, Tyler Helsinki, back in 2018. He was a Division I quarterback for Washington State University. And unbeknownst to us, he was suffering. And he took his life in January of 2018. We really didn't have any warnings or any signs to speak of. But looking back, now you start to see some of those signs that people talk about that we may have missed. And so Helsinki's Hope started actually 3 months after Tyler's death. And it really was a foundation born in many ways to save our lives, I think.
Right.
I know that sounds selfish in many ways, but we were a tight-knit family, or we are a tight-knit family. I have three brothers. Tyler is the middle son of my eldest brother, Mark. And we didn't know what to do. And we're a family of action. You're very familiar with that. You're a very action-oriented person, too. So we just felt we had to do something. And we didn't want it to be a flash in the pan type organization or anything like that. So we spent some time gathering some friends and family members, Mark and Kim, Tyler's parents, his siblings, Ryan and Kelly, and then my husband, Tony, and my other brothers. And we came up with Helsinki's Hope, originally founded as a mental health organization to provide resources to student athletes in colleges and universities across the country. And that has expanded since then. We started that way because Tyler was a student athlete. And
right.
So it's where what we knew at the time and where we had connections. So that's initially how it started, and we really didn't know what it was going to evolve into or what it was going to look like at the beginning. We just knew that we wanted something to preserve Tyler's legacy, but also something that would help student athletes across the country so parents and families didn't have to feel the way we did.
Right. But you guys poured all your grief into this action.
We did. We did, and in some ways that's good, and in some ways that's very bad, because it takes the place of the normal grieving process, I think.
Yeah.
So for me, it extended that grieving process out years. And you never stop grieving when you lose someone you love, but it didn't allow, I think, some of us, including Tyler's mom, to go through the process of that initial shock of loss, because we just were headfirst into doing.
And it's not easy to start a foundation or an organization, so all the stuff that goes into even getting it off the ground is tireless work. So I can imagine that you had to compartmentalize that grief so that you could do the action.
For sure. I mean, that's 100% accurate. And I think that it's how Kim said she was able to function, because she just, you feel like you're dying, right? You lose a child. And I know when you have other children still, you're still living for those children, but there's something about that grief that I think just takes over. And so it allowed for us to be productive and to do something with that grief.
And did you guys start at his college at Washington State?
We did. Yeah. And Washington State University is a very special place. It's always going to be a very special place for us. And we know that it's hard to think that way in some ways, because that's where he died. But it's also where his legacy is still living. And the people of Washington State are pretty special people for us. They picked us up when we were down. And his teammates, the other student athletes at Washington State, along with the coaches and families of many of his teammates, that's the only reason we're even here today, in some ways, with Holinsky's Hope, is because they rallied around us. And it was a very organic growth of Holinsky's Hope in the beginning.
Yes.
And I would say that for the first 2 years or so, Washington State carried us through that. So we did a lot of our work in Washington initially.
Yeah.
But
now you're everywhere.
We are everywhere. We are proud to say that we just celebrated our 6th year now for the Student Athlete Mental Health Week, which is a week in October that essentially is the first week in October. And the reason we chose October was because International Mental Health Day is October 10th. Mm-mm. And so football season is during that time. And so a lot of the activity with student athlete mental health is centered around the games of the schools on the corresponding weekends of that week. But it used to be called College Football Mental Health Week. And we quickly realized that football players are not the only players that suffer or that have needs. And so it expanded to Student Athlete Mental Health Week.
Yeah, I love that. Mm-hmm. And how many places are you in now?
So in October, we were at 210 colleges and universities across the country, including some high schools have now wanted to participate. And all 50 states.
I
are
love
participating.
That, including our kids' high school.
Including our kids' high school.
Yeah. Alma mater.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I wanted to just go over a few statistics at this point, because as Christine said, first they did it for football players, but you realize it's all athletes, all student athletes, plus a lot of other people. So my statistics are 3 years old, because it takes a long time for statistics to get updated. But in 2002, over 49,000 people died by suicide. So that's one death every 11 minutes. And because this is how the world works, we've actually been on the air for almost 11 minutes. So we've lost someone to suicide while we've been talking. 13.2 million adults thought about suicide. 3.8 million made an actual plan for suicide. And 1.6 million had an attempt at suicide. So if you think about 1.6 million people in the United States tried to take their own life, I mean, it's staggering. male suicide rates are 4 times higher than females. And I got to tell you, when I saw that statistic, I was shocked because my own personal experience with people who have died by suicide, I only know females. I mean, I'll count Tyler in my group, even though I didn't know him, but I know more people who have died by suicide than died from cancer. And it's all females that I know. So I was surprised that male suicide rates are higher. Firearms is the most common method at 54.6%. Suffocation is 24.7%, and poisoning or an overdose is 12.4%. As you talked about, there is no description of a typical suicidal person, but there are some markers. As we both know, and you've definitely said this, hindsight can wreak havoc on the surviving family. There's no place for blame or shame, no regret, no place for judgment in the wake of a suicide. But it occurs naturally because of how shocking suicide is. So I just want you to talk a little bit about the aftermath for the families. Like, when you find out, like, you know, how does that all look? Like, do you immediately say, there's no way, like, this can't be right? You know, is it the disbelief? Is it the anger? You know, do you go through all the phases of grief, you know, denial? Like, what's that like for these families? I'm sure you've talked to so many families.
Yeah, we have. And unfortunately, I can give firsthand, examples of what it did to our family and just my personal response to it.
Yeah.
And the night we found out, he was missing for a few hours. Nobody exactly knew what was happening. And the Washington State, one of the football coaches called my brother and said that Tyler was missing. And they were going to call the police. And my brother was just totally caught off guard, as our whole family was. But they quickly found his car a little bit later, and then a couple of his teammates actually broke into his apartment and found him.
Okay.
And that kind of response or scream that you have to grief or to shock, I actually experienced that. And I remember my kids being really scared to tell me, because they found out before I did.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So Drew and Aiden actually found out online.
Stop it.
Yeah. So it was actually on ESPN, an alert within about 15 minutes of the police being called and him being found, and it went over the wire. And my nephew had posted something on Facebook. He was just in shock, his younger brother, or on Instagram. And so my kids saw it and told my husband, and then they came home and to tell me. And so it breaks a family in a way that I think sometimes other deaths don't, because the blame is always, you're always going to feel responsible as parents, as family members, that you missed something. And there's just no way around that.
Right.
That goes with you, I think, to the grave. And it changes who people are. I mean, I don't think my kids will be upset if I share this, but my kid, growing up, Aiden had a very distinct personality. He was outgoing and excited all the time. And Drew was a little more conservative and quiet. And when Tyler died, they switched.
Oh.
Their personalities completely changed to us, to Tony and I. And I don't know if that was the reason, but I think it had played a part in how, you know, personalities change or dynamics change in a family. And so in many ways, parts of everyone dies.
Yeah.
When that person dies, and your family dynamic dies, and it has to, you either find a new way to be a family, or people break apart.
Yeah.
So those are the stories we hear, that you either get closer or you actually drift apart.
Yeah. I mean, I know from, again, personal experience, some of the parents that I know, you know, had to take a break from each other because the blame part, not so much blaming yourself, but maybe each other a little bit, like, well, why didn't you know? You talked to him or her more than I do, or you saw her last, or you saw him, you know, a week ago, you didn't see anything, you know, like that's, and I get that that's a little bit of human nature because you're just so gutted. For sure. But I, my personal experience is the couples have always come back together so incredibly strong because of that. And, you know, I can't imagine what it'd be like to be a single parent and lose a child, but it's just, it's an upside down world. That should never happen, obviously. And these kind of deaths are so, it's just, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I mean, death is terrible, right? It just is. I know losing someone, no matter how old they are or how young they are, you never have them long enough if you love them. And Mark and Kim are pretty open about the difficulties that they faced as a couple. And they never really blamed each other, which is an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But they talked initially about who would take their life to go be with him, which I, you know, as a, as their sister and somebody who loves them, it was hard to hear, but so understandable in many ways, because one would stay here with the children who are still alive and one would go be with the one who is gone. And I think a lot of that manifests out of just this extreme pain that you feel like you can't live with.
And have you heard that from other parents that
have lost? Yeah. I've heard it personally from other parents who just, either because they feel like they have to go go wherever that person is, you know, whatever your beliefs are in the afterlife or in death, but also because the pain is so intense.
Yes.
It becomes physical. Like it just, you double over and you can't, you feel like you can't get up.
So I have a story about someone who lost their child to suicide, and her feeling was, I get it, because I don't want to live anymore either. Like, that's the first time you understand the depths of the pain of someone who takes their own life, like what that feels like. I don't want to live anymore.
Sure.
And that's not a normal feeling. Most people don't feel like that ever in their lifetime. Right. You know, even saying things, oh my gosh, that killed me, or, you know, that's not real. But to feel that kind of feeling, like, I don't want to be on this earth anymore, because my child's not, that's kind of an aha moment in when they look back on that, like, I get it. I get why they felt that way, because I felt it and I know what that feels like, and it's terrible.
100%. I think that's a great way to explain it.
Yeah.
And you're right. You know, that most people won't feel that.
Yes.
That, but some do. And human nature is not to die, right? It's to live it all. That's part of how, what our, just physically how we're made up.
Yes.
So you know that people are sick when they die.
Exactly. Yeah. I wanted to just touch on this part. I know Helinski's Hope is working with school age kids, high school through college, with a special focus on student athletes. But after you lost your nephew, what surprised you most about this hidden demographic of struggling, overachieving adults? Nothing good comes from the what ifs, except perhaps the special ability to not discount any idealized or depressive language that's a possible precursor to an actual act. So you said, you know, there was nothing, you guys were stunned to your core that this happened, but then you start thinking back and, like, was there a little touch point where they maybe use some of that language that we hear, that kind of depressive language?
Yeah, so, and we try to be as open about it as we can with anyone who wants to know, and who, whenever they ask questions, we share everything we know. So, yeah, looking back, I think I looked at pictures of the last time I saw him in person, and I noticed he had lost weight, and he just didn't seem as energetic to me. He didn't seem as excited about things. And it was hard to put your I even mentioned it to my husband. I said, gosh, he looks really thin. But then you figure out a way to create the story in your head or the narrative in your head that everything's fine. And I just said, oh, he's a football player. He's working so hard. He's losing because he's, you know, 7 hours a day he's practicing. So
plus they're students.
Plus they're students, and right? They're trying
the
to balance it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And but yes, there are signs that I think most people are aware of to look for weight loss. Are they less interested in activity? Are they giving things away? Are they, you know, and the words that are chosen, you do have to listen for and be careful about. But
even someone who never, who cared about everything to say, I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
That, which seems like such an innocuous thing to say, I mean, sometimes like when my daughters say, well, I don't care about that. I know they're joking because of course you care about that. That's an important thing. People care about those kind of things. But to constantly say, I don't care about stuff, that really is a sign that they're struggling on some level.
It definitely can be. And there's something my brother said several years ago, and it just came out one time when he was talking to a group of students. I think it was at University of San Diego, and I was there, and I remember him saying this, and it stuck with me, and I think it's one of the best takeaways for people to, what do I do? How do I help other people? What if I see signs? What do I do? I'm afraid to say something. I don't want to anger people.
Yes.
I don't want to cause a situation that maybe shouldn't have been created to begin with, or concern for someone that shouldn't be there. But my brother said something. He said, from our perspective, it is better to help someone who doesn't need it, or to try and help someone who doesn't need it, than to miss someone who does.
Yeah.
Because if you think someone needs help, they're not going to hate you for asking them if they're suicidal. And you ask those direct questions.
Yeah.
You're going to get most likely direct answers. That's what the experts say. And I just want to say, I am not a mental health professional.
Right.
I cannot give mental health advice, but I can share the learnings that we've picked up over the years. And that would be one thing. If you have a feeling or are concerned about someone you love or a friend or someone you just encounter on the street,
yes,
do something or say something to someone.
Agreed, 100%. And I've actually done that in my life where I've been concerned about someone's child. And I'm okay with being wrong.
Yeah.
In that circumstance, I celebrate being wrong. And I'm no mental health professional either, but I have a lot of experience with mental health crisis, personal experience with my own daughter, plus in my own life. I mean, I was clinically depressed in my 20s. Well, before I lived in Santa Rosa, you know, really struggled for years and put my family through a lot of stuff with my own personal mental health crisis. And after I went through all of that and all the therapy, and even now looking back on that time, like I don't even recognize the person that I was, but no one said there was something wrong with me. Like, it was shocking. It's shocking for people to hear. I've said it before on my show, you know, I'm writing a book, and there's a whole chapter on this, my mental health struggle. And I think it's going to be really shocking for people because so many people in my life only know me as the way I am now, you know, married to Boyd, you know, mother of Grace and Leah, not as the person I was in my 20s, which was a completely different person. So,
yeah, well, let me just say thank you for sharing it, because I think that's the only way we create change, is that when people just like us, everyday people and people who have platforms, celebrities and athletes and all of that, when they share their experiences or their struggles, it gives people permission to say,
yes,
I'm hurting too.
Yes.
And that is, we often talk about, you know, the stigma associated with suicide and all of those things. It will probably take a generation for that stigma to change. But kudos to everyone who's brave. And I hope the day comes when I don't have to say people are brave for speaking up. But
that we've normalized it so much that you just talk about it.
It's just like I tore my ACL. Yes. I'm having these terrible thoughts about my life and I need help.
Yes.
Those two conversations should go hand in hand and they should be treated no differently.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. So I've always said that suicide is a secret. And in talking with my friends who've lost children to death by suicide, I know that the secrets hold tremendous pain for the family. Why couldn't they tell me? How are they so sad or troubled or unwell and we didn't know? And I think we've kind of covered this. You know, the insight is it's a secret. Mm-hmm. And going back to the statistics, 3.8 million made an actual plan for suicide. Of the 3.8 million, only 1.6 made an actual attempt. So when people are feeling hopeless, helpless, lost, depressed, suicidal, sometimes the activity of actually making a plan and thinking about that exercise allows them to ask for help before you get to the actual making an attempt. So, and I'm sure that you've heard so many stories like this. Here's the thing with something like Helsinki's Hope, and you're going to these campuses and you know, the people that come to the talks aren't necessarily survivors.
Right.
You know, it's everyone. It's not just parents. It's other athletes. I know after the situation with Tyler, not so long after, there was the female soccer player at Stanford. And, you know, all of her roommates were like, they saw this behavior, but they were like, it's hard being a scholar athlete, being a student athlete, being in a big program in a big D1 school with all eyes on you. And they just said, well, we all felt kind of the same way, too. It didn't seem that odd that she was feeling the way she was feeling. But once the suicide happened, they were so surprised,
right,
even though they could relate to all of that. So I think those kind of things, when you go to a Helsinki's Hope talk, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about this other organization, when you go to these things, the language that you use and the way that people respond, you're like in a room full of people that are all speaking the same language. They want to normalize it. They want to talk about it. Mm-hmm. They see all the layers and they want to say, yes, we get it. We get it. We hear it. We feel it. And I think there's so much power in those kind of groups because they do what we were just talking about. Go out into your communities and you see the signs. You're tuned in. You're more likely to say something and normalize the language.
Well, and you said, you know, you talked about these high-achieving, A-type personality people.
Yes.
That, like Tyler wasn't really an A-type personality. He was a peacemaker and kind of that, but he was driven.
Yes.
Right? He was working towards a goal. He had what people would say, everything going for him.
Yeah.
And so I think it's an interesting thing to consider. Why do people like that not ask for help? Well, I think there are a couple things, right? I think that mental health struggles, when you're in a place of crisis, like Tyler obviously was when he took his life, there's a physiological and a psychological component to those, right? I do believe that it's not that there's probably a chemical imbalance, that there's probably other things going on. And because human nature is not to die.
Yes.
It's to live at all cost. The other thing to consider, a lot of people, I think, don't speak up because they don't feel they're entitled to. They feel their life is too good. They haven't had a tragedy in their life.
Right.
Why? What is it I should be complaining about? And we feel that looking back at Tyler, that could have been a part of his process, that he had it all. He had great parents. He had people who supported him.
Yeah.
He had this great scholarship and playing football at D1. And what do I have to feel bad about?
Yeah.
And so then it spirals, right? You're not getting help. You're not seeing providers or getting the mental health resources or physical health resources you might need. So one thing I'd love for people to take away is You do not need a tragedy in your life to need help.
Yes.
You can be the everyday Joe who has everything going for them and not be well. And that's okay.
Yes.
And that's, we all can be at that place. And so I think when we give the Tyler talk, a lot of things we hear from people, it's really the biggest aspect of the Tyler talk is giving the kids in the room or the people in the room listening the permission to say, I need help too.
Yes, yes. And I think it definitely happens.
Yeah.
Because you remove that kind of guilt. You don't need to feel guilty.
Right.
That you're not feeling well.
Right.
And I'm sure there is a chemical componentry to it. There's probably a hereditary component to it.
I would suppose so too.
Yeah.
Yes.
So like just removing, as we said, the stigma, which mm-hmm. it's probably definitely going to take another generation till we get there. But
right.
There is a way of living fully without anyone knowing your pain. It's called functional depression. You go to work, you tell jokes, you take care of your family, yet mentally you're drowning in your own thoughts and no one knows. This is counterintuitive for parents. And I know when my daughter was in the depths of her personal mental health crisis, my husband and I were on high alert for any language that may have pointed to suicidal thinking. And I am so grateful that this was not her category of suffering. And she begged us for help, which we granted. But in preparing for the show, I also interviewed a board member of a nonprofit called the Overwatch Collection. And this is a group that supports first responders, active, reserve, and retired military personnel with their mental health. This group provides confidential counseling, and they use this term to describe their counselors as they're culturally competent, which I think is very important. It talks a little bit about what we just said, like, why would you be depressed? Why do you have a reason to feel this way? Your life is perfect. And if you have a counselor that says that to you, that discounts how you're feeling. So a culturally competent counselor who's familiar with PTSD and isolation in the military and what first responders see, and then they're expected to go home and have a regular life, hug their wife and play with their baby when they've just seen terrible, unimaginable loss. So they do this counseling. They have a buddy system. They have a podcast, and they provide services at low or no cost while helping to navigate and bridge the gap between private insurance and VA benefits. The Overwatch Collective is doing some really good work, and their motto is one more is one less. And I just love that so much, because if you help one person, that's one less loss we suffer in death by suicide. So I'm going to link both Helinski's Hope and the Overwatch Collective on my social medias, which I've already done in preparation of this show and in advertising the show. And I encourage everyone to follow, donate, support the work these organizations are doing. I want to give a shout out to the two founding members of the Overwatch Collective, which is Greg Grogan and Jesse Coulter. And just the work they're doing is amazing. They have these podcasts, and you can just watch clips of them like on all the social medias, TikTok, Instagram. And it's so inspiring, because think about first responders or military personnel and how the job is so noble, but the life is so isolating, because you're seeing all these things. And in some branches of the military, you can't even talk about what you've seen because it's security clearance or whatever. And you go to basic training with these 18-year-olds, and then you go get stationed somewhere far away from your family. And young kids like that, they start to feel isolated. And I can't talk to my parents about how I'm feeling. Like, I'm in the military, I'm supposed to be strong, or I'm a fireman and I'm supposed to be brave. And all of the stigma around those things causes a lot of this disconnection where they feel like, I just can't live like this anymore. And I was watching one of the podcasts of the Overwatch Collective the other day, and I was bawling. I was crying so hard, because they were talking about, you know, the PTSD. Once you leave the military, you think, okay, you're not seeing that anymore. Get on with your life. You've got a beautiful wife and children, and your life is good. You have a civilian job, and, you know, maybe you're already getting your military pension. I mean, again, what do you have to be sad about?
Right.
but the PTSD is so crippling for them. And it's just terrible. I mean, there's nothing you can say that makes it make sense, of course, but I just love that these organizations are out there, Helsinki's Hope, with the younger generation, the college kids, the high school kids, and the Overwatch Collective, which there are some young people, but, you know, mostly they're in these established jobs, first responders, military, and a lot of retired military that we've all, if you're of a certain age, you know about, like the Vietnam War veterans and how they were made to feel about what they did and some of the, you know, people that are trying to get benefits through the VA, and it's just not available.
It's rough. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a little something I saw on social media that I saw it a while ago, but then I drilled down on it a little bit. It's about telling someone to, quote, have a good day. And sometimes you can't have a good day. You can only have a day. The simple act of standing up takes all you have. So just have a day. Have a bite to eat, brush your teeth, comb your hair, get dressed. Just one thing is good enough, and it takes the full bandwidth available to those suffering with a mental health crisis to do just one thing. And I remember this with my daughter. Like, I had to tell myself almost on a daily basis, she did one thing. Like, that one thing is good enough. She actually got out of bed. She came downstairs. She ate a meal with us. Like, it's good enough. That's all she could do that day. That was good enough for us. And I think keeping that in mind when you say to someone, oh, have a great day, and you know that they're not doing great, like, just have a day. Go have a day. Do one thing that kind of keeps you present. And sometimes that's all that they can do. So I'm grabbing onto you for all of your insight, like the things you've seen and heard with your audiences. And I mean, if you had to give some advice, like, how do we help the survivors? You know, because when my friends have lost their children, like, I just want to be there. I mean, I don't even need to say anything. I just want to show up for them. Like, how do we show up? How do we help people who are suffering? Like, what's one thing that you can tell our audience? For sure, this is something that should be done or can be done.
Well, I was fortunate to get to know you early on when our kids were at Cardinal Newman. And there are several people that I remember who reached out to me right after Tyler died. And you were actually one of those people. And you and I didn't know each other that well at that point. And then I had people who were very close to me who did not reach out because they didn't know what to say.
Yeah.
And I get that. But I think the best thing, and you just said it, you've done it for parents who've lost children, friends of yours. It's just to be there and just to say, I'm here. I've learned, I used to have a very strong belief about what people should do or shouldn't do in life. And I think losing Tyler has changed that in me and has allowed me to give more grace to myself, but to others as well. And you wouldn't be shocked at some of the things people had said to us or to me after Tyler died. But I think when people say things with the right intent,
yes,
we have to let some of our opinions about what they say go.
Yeah.
And just know that they're there. They're trying.
Yes.
And so I encourage everyone who's friends with or family members and they are the survivors of suicide. And that by that, I don't mean attempted. They're the family members like we've been discussing. Just let them know you're there. Because they're going to need you someday.
Yes.
Even if it's just to call and scream. But that's the best thing that anyone can do.
Just show up.
Just show up.
Yes, 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So this is obviously a way different show than I usually do. But I have to do my radio business because that's part of my responsibility. So I'm going to do a few underwriters and announce a current event. We have a fundraising event for KOWS. We are community radio and we're through donations and sponsorships only. On Sunday, April 6th, from 7 to 9 p.m., there's a comedy night. It's Uncle Charlie and Friends Comedy Night and Raffle. And it's at Barrel Proof Lounge, which is 501 Mendocino Avenue in Santa Rosa, California. You can get tickets in advance. This is on our website if you want to go. There's a scan for tickets, $15 in advance, $20 at the door. There's a few comedians that are going to be there. Uncle Charlie Adams, Brian Thomas, Kelly Kaufman, Martin Marufo, and John Lair is the host. My husband thinks he has a comedy routine, but I really don't want him to put it out there for the world to see. So hopefully he won't be around on April 6th and show up and get some confidence, because that's not the vibe for me. Our first current event from one of our underwriters is the Occidental Center for the Arts is excited to bring the West County indie music artist Mark Fair and friends. They'll deliver cinematic art folk song shot through with a raw poetic energy. Mark's voice is deep, intimate, and intense, and his open-hearted music pulls you in like an art house film. His talented bandmates will perform a fiery selection of soulful lyrics and melodies for an evening that will lift you up and touch your spirit. It all takes place on Saturday, March 22nd, which is this Saturday at 7 p.m. Tickets are available now for you, and you can find out more by calling the Occidental Center for the Arts or going to their webpage, occidentalcenterforthearts.org. And then I think that's going to be good enough, too, for today. I have some songs that I wanted to play because I always love to have music with my shows. And I found this song by Noah Kahan. I think that's how you say his last name, K-A-H-A-N, Noah Kahan. It's called Call Your Mom, and it's a beautiful song. So I'm going to kill our mics. Christine and I are going to chat, and I'm going to play a song for everyone. So let me find it in my playlist. Here's Call Your Mom by Noah Kahan. Let's see. Okay.
Oh, you spy, but then again, the moment right before it ends, you're most afraid of, but don't you cancel any plans. Cause I won't let you get the chance to never make them. Stayed on the line with you the entire night until you let it out and let it in. Don't let this darkness fool you. All lights turned off can be turned on. Like this, if you could see yourself like this, you'd have never tried it. Stayed on the line with you the entire night till you told me that you had to go.
drive another mile, wondering if you're breathing. Won't you stay, won't you stay, won't you stay with me? Medicate, meditate, save your soul for Jesus. Throw a punch, fall in love, give yourself a reason. Don't wanna drive another mile without knowing you're breathing. So won't you stay, won't you stay, won't you stay with me? Don't let this darkness fool you. All lights turned off can be turned on. I'll drive all night. I'll call your home. Oh dear, don't be discouraged. I've been exactly where you are. I'll drive all night. I'll call your home. I'll call your home.
Okay, that song's amazing. And I'm not going to talk about it because there's no time for crying. So obviously, Christine and I have a lot still to talk about, and I just can't get through it all. But I did want to mention this, which could be its own show. Our current administration is disbanding some of the organizations that research, fund, and disseminate information and treatment for our fragile populations suffering from lack of access to appropriate mental health care. And this is very disconcerting to us. But there are things that we can do. And this is one of the things we can do, which is talk about it and announce the places where people can go for help. And with Overwatch Collective being one for first responders and active, retired, and reserve military people, there are a lot of places that you can go for help. And if they successfully dismantle all of the organizations that are available, then we as a nation have to come together and help these populations. That's our job, I think, as being fellow American citizens. So I want to thank Christine for coming on the show and sharing all of her knowledge and insight on this topic. And if we help one person, encourage one family, or lead someone to join the fight, then we've been successful today. So I just want to give you an opportunity for final thoughts, and then I'll close the show the way I do every time with one more song.
Well, yeah, I mean, you said it. If we help one person, save one person, or yes, get them to be involved, then we're successful. I do want to say, and I don't want to embarrass you, but I want to thank you personally for your support over the years, you and Boyd, Stockholm Construction, for supporting Helsinki's Hope, student athletes, not just student athletes, but students across the country. So young people. And much of what, or all of what we do is supported by our fundraising. And so, and that's a hard thing to do, especially when you're so close personally to an organization like we are that's built on Tyler's legacy. It's hard to ask for for money and support. So I thank you always for being there with us from the beginning to today and into the future, I know. So personally, I just wanted to say that.
You're very welcome. It's nice when you get the phone call, someone asking for a donation. I say I've already chosen my charities for the year, and Helsinki's Hope, Redwood Empire Food Bank, and now the Overwatch Collective. Those are like going to be top three for me. Yeah. And I rep Helsinki's Hope all the time. I have the baseball cap. I have the sweatshirt. I wore the bracelets. I think my husband's wearing a bracelet right now. He loves the bracelets. So we definitely are repping because our heart is there.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's much appreciated always. A couple of things I just leave the audience with. I think when we talk about suicide, you mentioned it early on, that many people who suffer from mental illness don't don't get to that place of crisis, right? There are many stages of illness and different types of illness. But one thing that we need to do as a country is to learn how to manage our mental wellness. So just like we do our physical wellness, nobody thinks twice about going to a yoga class or joining a gym or hiring a nutritionist. But we still have this stigma and overarching kind of veil or cloud over asking for mental health. And so I encourage people to practice it.
Yes.
You know, practice your mental health just like you would practice your taking care of your physical health. And one day I hope that it's never a question. It's seamless.
It's just part of it.
I know it's overused. People say mental health is health,
yes.
But it's true. There should be no difference between physical health and mental health.
And we've put a dollar sign associated with getting help that most people are like, I can't afford to get help. And there are ways to get help without having to pay for help.
Right.
And if we start organizing our healthcare insurance,
I know.
It's a whole nother show.
We could go on and on about the dismantling of our...
For sure. I'm literally going to dedicate an entire show to mental health wellness practices that you can do that don't involve paying $125 an hour to talk to someone.
That's fantastic, because we know that if you don't have effective coping mechanisms to deal with your stress or your anxiety or whatever it is that's causing you that mental unrest, then it spirals out of control.
Right.
So,
and it starts young. It starts young. I mean, my daughter has struggled with anxiety and OCD behavior since she was 8 years old. Yeah. And no one looks at an 8-year-old and says they have mental health struggles. But having crippling anxiety is a mental health struggle. And she has been dealing with that since she was young. I mean, I talked about in one chapter of my book, she was nonverbal, so not even speaking yet. And she could not tolerate things not being in their place, like a cabinet door not being closed all the way. Those kind of things can manifest in young kids and turn into something big. And you can't just say, oh, you know, they'll grow out of it or something like that. Like, we need a plan for life to constantly be feeding and supporting our mental wellness.
Well, yeah, it should be part of our educational system from the very beginning.
Yeah, which I love that Helsinki's Hope is doing things at the high school level, because that's a real pivot point for a lot of kids.
Yeah.
That age group is so... There's
even,
so much coming
even
at
younger.
Them.
I think you and I have talked about middle school really is really, there's almost not a place that's too young to start.
So true.
So yeah, you just have to do the appropriate things at the appropriate time or teach the appropriate things. So.
All right. End of the show. We've got 6 minutes and I think the song I'm going to play is like four. So, so I vowed to close all my shows with a Bailey Zimmerman song until the new season of American Idol came back on, which it's on. We're like going to be in week 3. It's on Sunday nights because Carrie Underwood was on my bad list. But she's back in my good graces. She's doing really well on American Idol. She's a little too nice, but I think that's her vibe. So I'm going to play a song by Bailey Zimmerman, and then next week we'll get back to Carrie Underwood on the Hot Rotation. The song is called Never Leave. It's brilliant. So I'm going to play that. I'll be back with Level Up with Danny on April 3rd, brand new episode. And until then, let's take care of each other out there. We're all we got, okay? So this is Never Leave by Bailey Zimmerman. All the days we've been getting through.
swore you'd never leave me. So I've been thinking it'd be easy to get down on one knee for both our sake. Let's put love back in its place. I won't give up on you. So darling, don't give up on me. Don't you wanna stay? Don't just walk away.
When I was first trained to be on the radio, the guy that trained me said the worst thing in radio is dead air. So I have one more minute, so I have to talk some more. I'm going to do station identification. This is KOWS 92.5 XM out of Occidental, not XM, FM, out of Occidental, California. Streaming on the web at KOWSFM.com. Today's show will be in the archives tomorrow, so if you want to replay it or share it with someone, please do, and look to my social medias for all the organizations we talked about today.